Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick. We're here to continue our recollection series, and today we're talking about Derek Mason. Joining me to do that is my friend Fraser Tafar, a co-host for the Matchup Show. Fraser, how you doing?
Doing good, Ken. Glad to be on, talking about one of the best Ravens wide receivers that we've had in history. I think this is probably my favorite wide receiver I ever had, to be honest.
Still holds a lot of the records for the team and hell of a player. He played under a significant handicap with his first 3 years being under Bowler and McNair, his last three being with Flacco. Much better connection with Flacco. It really showed up in the yards per target number. McNair and Bowler, 7.0 yards per target during his first 3 years here. Really, honestly, was not tremendously productive on a per target basis, obviously. Much better at 8.1 yards per target with Flacco. Lots of synergies there.
Right. I think speaking to the latter half of his career with Flacco, it was magical connection, and it's exactly what he needed in the beginning of his career because it helped him down the road when he had a more capable receiver and better core in general to get to where he wanted him to go as the Super Bowl champion that he became. But it was exciting to see someone be reliable. And at the time, it was Todd Heap that was our number one pass catcher. So to have someone else step up and be consistent was huge.
Heap and Mason together were an awful lot of the Ravens offense back then. And they ran the ball effectively too. But the back shoulder connection with Flacco was something I won't ever forget. It's just, yep. You know, Flacco, first of all, had all of the arm strength necessary to make that throw. If you're throwing a 10-yard out to the sideline, that's a fairly long distance throw in a sense. If you're throwing it from the middle of the field, it's about 25 yards to that sideline. So it's not an insignificant amount of distance. And if you don't throw a fastball, you don't have a good fastball, then the results, if the ball is picked off, are very significant. And the chance of the ball being deflected or picked off increase when you leave that ball hanging in the air too long, you get hit, whatever they may have occurred. But Flacco and Mason had that connection where the ball could be out and Mason would not let Flacco down, and he would turn, find the ball, and make the catch.
Yeah, and the one thing that I always think about Derek Mason is that he's the comeback king. He sells the fade perfectly every single time, and he snaps it down. You know what's coming, but he gets it done every single time. And it would set up his go routes, and he'd be wide open all the time on stop and goes because you have to respect every part of his game. He was a technician. So it was a joy to watch him play.
It's really important what you just said, because you need to have complementary routes which are effective. Mm-hmm. So just having like a slant and a comeback route, well, those routes aren't really complementary. You want a sluggo and a slant. Mm-hmm. You want a stop and go and a comeback. You want to have
post corner.
Yeah, or maybe a dig route and a go route. I mean, you've got multiple things you can try and do with. But if you want to have one deep, one short, generally speaking, one coming back to the quarterback and one not, because that's how you really get that defender stopped and to guess wrong on what you're doing. And that can certainly set you up for some big plays.
Yeah, and it was the impressive thing about Mason is that in the 2008 season, he ended up messing up his shoulder halfway through the season. So all the way through, he was managing through pain, and it was impressive to see him do the things he was doing, especially that Dallas game. He came up big.
Yeah, Dallas game was one where he caught a touchdown, and he also had an incredible fumble recovery. I think that might have been McLean, but I'm not 100% sure who had the fumble on the play. Anyway, he recovered it downfield with one arm. It was in the final game at Texas Stadium. And a lot of people remember the 265 yards rushing or the two long touchdowns by McGahee and McLean. But it wouldn't have – I'm not sure the Ravens have been in the same position in that game without Mason recovering that fumble, which was an enormous play in the game.
Yeah, just all-around kind of guy. I mean, he's – I don't know. He – coming from Tennessee and just seeing the kind of guy he was a Pro Bowl returner in 2000, right? And he was able to become this elite receiver. I don't know, at the time they were calling him quote unquote elite. I don't know if that word was thrown around, but he was a pro at what he was doing.
Yeah, he had great years with McNair in Tennessee.
Yep.
McNair obviously wasn't the same quarterback when he came to Baltimore, but I've just watched in the 97 game where the Ravens beat the Tennessee 36-10 in Memphis, of all places. Tennessee is still called the Oilers at that point. Wow. And Mason is a rookie, and he has a couple of real long returns. And that's one of the things about Mason's early career. He spent 3 years basically languishing, almost used primarily as a return man, not as a threat as a receiver, really. Didn't have good receiving numbers. And then in 2000, he broke out. And for 2 years there, I know 2000, 2001, he was arguably, you know, one of the top five receivers in the game, where he had 10.1 and 10.0 yards per target in those two seasons. He was all pro one in 2000. Next year, didn't make the Pro Bowl even. But obviously, Tennessee was good in both of those years.
Yeah, and I'm kind of mad we didn't get him in those years when he was developing as a really decent receiver, because near the last half of Joe Klacko's career, especially in that 9 and 10, he kind of broke down a little bit, and those nicks and crans got really, really, really bad on him.
I'm sorry, I missed that last part. The nicks he had taken, you're saying?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. You know, Mason was one of those guys who was constantly trying to negotiate a 2-to-make-1 deal at the end of his career. You know, basically sign for a 2-year extension, where he'd have to play 1 year, get the signing bonus, and then you know, try and basically talk about retiring again. It was kind of getting tiresome by the end. And I don't remember how many times it occurred, whether it occurred once or twice or whatever, but the Ravens finally let him go. And in 2011, he finished up with Houston and the New York Jets. But you know, there's so much great to remember about Mason. I he's 6 years in Baltimore. He played every game when he was with the Ravens. He played all 96 games, even with the injuries that were occurring and whatnot. Remarkably consistent. He always had between 100 and 164 targets each of those years. So you're talking about a guy who was a very high volume of the Ravens offense in both the late McNair and early Flacco era, ran through him.
Yep. And I think, like we said earlier, the Todd Heap point was like kind of like a transition over, and then it helped us rely on the receiving core more and more. And it showed with the development of other receivers like Clayton. And then when we brought in Bolden and Hushmanzada. Torrey Smith came in 11, though, correct?
Torrey Smith in 11, yes.
Yes.
Oh, you're saying after he was gone. Okay, good point. Yes.
Yeah. So just showing that we were able to develop our guys, have this core idea of what we want our receivers to look like, and it's proven to that point. And now that we have a receiver in Zay Flowers, who hopefully can take this next step and become this great Ravens wide receiver. But if he can take the traits of Derek Mason and selling his go, and no one in the NFL probably can sell a go like Zay Flowers at this point with his speed and his burst, he can become way, way better than Derek Mason.
Now, I think I would make a subtle distinction there. And I think you're right that, I mean, Zay Flowers is a tremendously sudden athlete. Mm. Bateman is the better route runner still. Yes. Of those two. When Flowers learns to sell at the top of the route, to really wait for the other guy to read his leverage, to try and, you know, make him miss, look out NFL, because Zay Flowers will be the best receiver in the NFL when that happens. He's already, you know, a good receiver. He's already probably in the top 25 guys in the entire league right now, but he could easily be in the top 3 if he can learn to sell at the top of the route with the kind of speed he has, because he'll lose people by 5-6 yards a throw.
Yes, and he looks like he's going through the Marquise Brown route, where he's bulking up and he's looking good right now. I mean, he's just getting better, and it's exciting to see. I'm excited to see what Bateman looks like coming in. I mean, it's going to be – I want to see him get his opportunity. I don't know. I hope Monken and Lamar, I hope they get together and really understand how to get him involved, because I think that's, he was just the odd man out when Odell came in. They were focusing on how to game plan for him and trying to make sure they get their worth for their asset. But now I think it's Bateman's time, and they have to make that move.
Well, I hope you're right about that too. And a lot of the routes they depended upon for Odell, I mean, Lamar just had more confidence letting Odell go make a play on the ball deep down the field. And it's very clear in the amount of times he overthrows Bateman in a relative sense on a lot of the same routes, lot of the same kind of route down the sideline and deep, oftentimes on the right sideline. Odell had some catches on the left and right, and Bateman has been thrown to in the left and right as well. But just it seems to be, for whatever reason, Jackson was overthrowing Bateman more often this last season, which is very frustrating to see. And I'm sure it wasn't making Bateman feel good. And it's not a matter of, as it could be said was true of Flowers, that he didn't have the speed to maybe run under the same speed to run under the football. I mean, obviously Bateman is faster than Beckham at this point in their careers. That's not really the issue. So I do want to see a better connection there between those two. And I hope that Bateman does some of the things that Mason did during his career, which is develop complementary routes that he can run. And Bateman in Minnesota, he sure as hell could run everything. You can see he ran a little bit of everything when he was there. Great at losing somebody at the top of the route. It just needs to see that at the NFL level and more of it on a more consistent and higher volume basis as he goes through this.
I'm hoping to see videos of him and Lamar actually throwing this offseason. Like multiple times, not just one time. Because, I mean, we saw Zay Flowers at least twice with him and Odell. That being, didn't see Bateman one time last year. So looking to see that at least once.
And before that, we saw a lot of Prochet, I think, working out with Lamar. If I'm remembering correctly, who was wearing a helmet and working out with him? Because I remember thinking that's really good when somebody wants to wear their helmet when they're in one of these, you know, playground workout, and they want to try and work with the limitations that the helmet, you know, imposes on you.
It wouldn't shock me if it was Prochet. I think he tried really hard to get into the NFL, but we'll see.
The other thing I remember about Mason that was just a very big deal when he was here, and this is true in general, was that the Ravens had such a staple use of the boot in that era, and they did it both with McNair when he was here, because McNair was not the same kind of mobile quarterback he had been early in his career, and also with Flacco, certainly, because they ran the boot a ton with Flacco. And by the way, it didn't even really change by coordinator very much. They did run it a lot with Kubiak. So he seemed to be very facile with it. Yep. But Flacco just loved the boot. And, you know, the guy who was typically the deep threat on that sideline was Mason. So you have a level, you know, a zero or one and a two, if you want to call it, in terms of the depth of the receivers, and the it's usually a tight end who initially blocks, who ends up being the right at the line of scrimmage receiver. And then you have a mid-range target, which usually comes from the other side of the field. Right. And then you have a long-range target, who's usually the Z receiver on the side you're rolling to typically.
Right.
Yeah. So didn't you know it's possible to get THC shipped right to your door? Mood delivers premium 100% federally legal THC directly to you. I'm talking about delicious high potency gummies, top shelf flower, home baked cookies, vapes, anything you'd find at a dispensary. You can now order online and have it shipped quickly, discreetly, and conveniently right to your door. And every Mood product is made from pesticide free cannabis grown on America's best small farms at prices that won't destroy your wallet. Best of all, not only is every Mood product backed by a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but as I mentioned, listeners get 20% off their first order with code RAVENS. So head to mood.com/ravens, check out their online dispensary, and let Mood help you discover your perfect mood. And don't forget to use promo code RAVENS when you check out to save 20% on your first order. Something that he was very adept with, and you can also see how that would have worked well with some of the fakery that Mason could throw on a defensive back with that.
Yep, exactly, because most of the times when you're in a boot formation, it's heavy. You got two tight ends, two backs, and you're able to probably get the defense in a man coverage. And at that point, if Mason's selling the go and he's actually going to go on a go, defensive back's turned. So he's not knowing that the rollout's his side and there's no safety help. I mean, that's easy throw for Joe. If there's safety over top, then that over route coming across is the best way. So that was the formula in between that era for Joe, even like you said, after. But it was really, that was the catalyst for us to get to where we wanted to go ultimately in 2012. So it was really, to me, like I said earlier, the way that Mason just gave Flacco confidence in his game and just being able to trust and the timing and just the accuracy. Like, we don't see that in the offense that we have today. And that kind of frustrates me a little bit, not knocking Lamar's game or anything, but just that consistent timing on the out routes, on the stops, just every time it was like clockwork with Joe. And not just Mason, it was with Bolden, Smith, whoever it was, he was able to get the ball to them and not have issues. I would love to see that be incorporated into our offense.
Right. That's a very complex puzzle beyond the scope of the Mason discussion to really go into, but there's a lot of moving parts to that, to make mm-hmm. that work and to make Jackson into a great back shoulder thrower that Flacco was. Because, you know, if there's always throws which some quarterbacks are better than others, and Jackson is there's a whole smorgasbord of off schedule throws yep. that Jackson is much better at, and there's other ones that are RPOs that Flacco couldn't do. But when it came to the particular 10-yard out, you know, the 10-yard hitch, just is Flacco, that was his baby, and yeah. He was great at it.
I do not doubt you on that. That's very true. I just think Lamar has the arm strength. You just can't doubt that. I know he can do it.
It's so not maybe me. It could be still a timing issue. Could still be an accuracy issue potentially with Lamar going to the sidelines. I mean, it is a long throw for starters.
Yeah, it is.
So it requires different things. And I look at something like the way Flacco knew how to run the quarterback sneak was very. Right. Yes. Knowing about how to do the dance steps with Marshall Yanda. And he always pretty much ran it over the exact same gap yep. with Yanda. It's not like he, I'm going to run the boot this time, or I'm going to go out two gaps this time and I'm going to run. Mm-hmm. It's pretty much, he just knew exactly how to do it with Yanda time after time that it would work.
Yeah. And yeah, there's some things that you can take away from each other, both those games, that would benefit if Lamar could do what Joe did sometimes. But mm-hmm. I think, it's going to be interesting to see how we go moving forward, because that the timing routes would make the off schedule plays even better for Lamar, because sure. the impact would just make them force the defense to be on their front foot, not on their back foot, yeah. trying to figure out where they're going to go.
Completely agree with that. Completely agree. If you constantly are showing good timing, you can force the defense to try and guess to stop it.
Yep.
And that can be absolutely deadly if Jackson, you know, suddenly pulls the rug out from under you and decides he wants to make a different throw or run the ball even himself. I mean, just lots of opportunity goes with that. Let's get back to Derek Mason for a second, because we don't have a lot of time here, but I want to talk about some of his great moments as a Raven. And one of the first one was in an incredible comeback win in 2006 against the Titans. So McNair is playing the Titans again for the first time. Mason played him in 2005, actually, and the Ravens lost that game down in Tennessee. But they got a rematch in 2006 down there. And the Ravens were down 26-7 in the second quarter to Vince Young. And they came back with 19 unanswered points to win the game 26-7. And it was Mason who caught the game-winning touchdown with, I think there might have been about 3 minutes. No, it was less than that in terms of time remaining, because they then had a limited amount, maybe less than a minute, to drive down the field and try and kick a field goal that then Trevor Price blocked to win the game. But great game for McNair and Mason to go back there and win in their first time back together in Tennessee.
It's a moment like this, you think the NFL script, because you can't really write this kind of stuff. These two former Tennessee guys, and they're able to both will this massive comeback against their former team. I think mm-hmm. it's definitely a big, big point for Derek Mason. I think when I think of huge games were huge plays for him. It's that 2008 touchdown in the wild card, in the divisional game against Tennessee. Mm-hmm. That was, being a young fan and not really understanding the game, that was probably one of the plays that are just crystallized in my memory that I will never forget, because it was just a huge catalyst, because you can tell in the beginning that this was going to be a defensive game, wasn't going to be too many points scored. So to get a lead early was huge in that game.
Yeah, they got the game tied on that play. So Tennessee went up 7-0. It's incredible. And now the analogies to that 2000 game, where they went down 7 and then they tied it at 7. It was 7-7 at the half, and then it was 10-10. And then in 2000, the Ravens moved ahead with the blocked field goal in their turn, then the Lewis touchdown to really seal it. And in the 2008 game, they came back with the heap grab on 3rd and 2 after the disputed no call.
Yeah. 2 second delay game that we should have got. Yeah.
Well, it was what it was. But that, I believe that touchdown is his only receiving touchdown. No, that's not true. He had one other receiving touchdown. It was against New England in 2003. So this is only playoff receiving touchdown in 6-7 games. Wow. As a Raven. So that was a nice one. He played at 8, 9, and 10. No, that's not true. He played in 6, 8, 9, and 10. So he actually played.
Oh yeah, six. We didn't do anything. Yeah,
eight total postseason games with the Ravens. Let's see. That was a great one. Love that game, by the way. That's just one of the really things. I won't go into it. It's a story too long.
And the defensive plays in that game were just insane. The Algie Cumber fumble, yep. The 1 yard line, the big hit on the Ray Lewis that I had. I mean, it was a classic. I mean, yep. That's one of those games that I could just turn it on and I can get the same emotions every single time.
It's still on YouTube, by the way, out there. If you want to go take a look at it, there's I don't know if it's out there right now, but it's taken down and then it's put back up by somebody else, kind of thing. Yeah. But it's definitely a recording you want to have if you can make it. I've got one other I want to mention, and that is in the 2009 season, the Ravens went up to play New England, and they ended up going to New England again a second time that year in the playoffs and really beat the snot out of them. They lost this first game of the playoffs at the beginning of October, 27-21. A lot of people remember it because Mark Clayton dropped a pass on 4th and 4 that he really should have caught to convert a first down. But Mason on the first drive of that game did something I have never seen before. It may have happened in NFL history, but it wouldn't shock me if it never happened otherwise in NFL history. The Ravens had an opening drive with 6 first downs where they drove down the field and scored a touchdown that eventually went to Mason, by the way. All 6 first downs were Derek Mason. So he had 6 first downs on one drive, including the touchdown. So a remarkable moment. It's one of these things where the out route was in full display there, and then he ended up beating the defender deep for the touchdown. But that was just one great string of Flacco to Mason plays.
And the touchdown was pretty cool too. They had a cool snapshot of him when he was upside down with on his head when he caught the ball. That was pretty cool.
That was the one. It was a game against the Patriots in October
2009. Yeah.
Okay.
He caught it. Yeah. He went up for it, and then the defender went under his legs, and then he kind of flipped over, and then there was a snapshot of him. I don't know. It wasn't on the broadcast or anything, but just something I saw when I was a kid. That was one of the best plays that I've seen him make. And obviously, as you said, the drives was good too. And I think that was epitome of exactly what we were looking for at the receiving position. Someone who can come up big on every single third down that we need. We need a big play. You go to that guy. Like, it's tough that we have it now, but just the consistency at the position needs to be there. Like, we had a Derek Mason.
Very, very reliable player over the years. Success rate always pretty high as a receiver. It's not like you're throwing the ball to a running back, and it shouldn't be. But he had a fairly high percentage. I'm trying to look at it right now if I can find his first downs with the Ravens. Yes, he had 315 first downs on 471 receptions with the Ravens. Wow. That's really good, by the way. Running backs can sometimes be around like in the high 30s or about 40%, but receivers really should be about 60 or 65%. It looks like Mason was right around 67% of his. So fantastic career with the Ravens in terms of those first downs.
One game that came to my mind when I was thinking about Derek Mason is the 2010 game against Detroit, where he caught a slant or a post from Joe, and both the defenders collapsed in on him and just sandwiched him. He stayed on his feet, and he was able to score the touchdown. That was just – that was an impressive play that I'll never forget. That was a great season, too, that 2010 season as well. Just a great play by him.
Now, was it against the Lions for sure, or was it somebody? It doesn't matter. But
Lions or Seahawks, I think maybe.
Okay. Anyway, I have seen that play before, and I'm sure it's Mason is a guy I've seen it for. I also saw Marcus Robinson do it against the Seahawks in 2003. But it seems to happen fairly often that two defenders will crunch on a receiver at the same time, and they'll both bounce off. And when I say often, I've seen it maybe three times lifetime is what I'm going to tell you. It's not like a very frequent thing, but you know, it's a recipe for missed tackles when that seems to happen at the same time. You should be, I mean, one guy's got to be going high, the other low to really make that receiver pay for that.
My apologies. It was 2009.
There you go. Yep. Frazier, it's always a pleasure to talk about this with you. This is exactly what we're looking for in terms of this episode. If you're wondering, you know, what will make an interesting episode for this, this is what I'd consider. And by the way, if you feel differently about it, let me know. DM me on Twitter. Also DM me on Twitter if you want to pick a player and do this. Frazier, before we log off, tell folks where they can talk football with you online.
You guys can find me at X/Twitter at F_RAVE8. That's F_RAVE8.
All right. Well, thanks, Frazier. Other folks, make sure you DM me. They're always open, and I do want to hear the player you'd like to do. We have about 15 now selected, but I'm especially looking for players from the very early Ravens era. I will put up a tweet of guys I want to specifically see, but nobody's taken Michael Jackson, Derek Alexander, Eric Green, Eric Turner, Vinny Testaverde. Nobody's taken those guys. And I know a lot of Twitter people and a lot of other podcast people tend to be younger. So if you want to take this to your dad and say, hey, you know, do you remember who Vinny Testaverde was? Because this guy's looking for somebody to talk to on a show about it. That'd be great. Anyway, so I always want to try and find new listeners for the show, of course. Frazier, thanks again for joining me.
Thank you.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.